that's a really cool story. Gun's been out there for 120 years, 130 years, and somebody finds it leaning up against a tree. Wouldn't you love to know the story of who left it? Boy, I bet his dad was mad. Left my gun out, now you can't find it. Oh, me. Did anybody else wake up Friday morning and could not remember where you left your sunglasses because you hadn't seen the sun for so many days? I was running around looking for mine, too, because my eyes hurt. Seems like it's been forever since we saw a sunrise, but it's high and bright out there this weekend. Man, I hope you find some time to get outside and enjoy it, even if you just roll the windows down on the car. Yeah, you can turn the heat on. That's allowed. But, it is beautiful out there. Welcome to another Saturday on Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and thanks for tuning in. You can find this show right there on your radio dial at 94.5. That's on the FM side. On Facebook at facebook.com/WoodsandWaterSC. Don't forget to hit the like button when you're there. We're on Instagram at #WoodsandWaterSCRadio. And you can see more and listen to the podcast on the website, woodsandwatersc.com. The numbers to call on today's show. And I always welcome your calls on whatever you want to talk about. 235-9405 in the Greenville area, or 877-235-9405 somewhere else. So have your kids had the flu or one of those other bugs that are going around right now? I watched all the Facebook posts about sick kids, parents hoping to avoid catching whatever the kids had, but you get that final post, well, it got me, and then you watch them go through it all. You know, we had it going around our house. First it got my youngest daughter, then the oldest. Me, man, I moved downstairs to my office / man cave / doghouse with Sophie, hoping to avoid it. Both kids are over it, and right now I feel pretty good. So maybe I made it through. Lucked out. What I want to know is how mothers take care of one sick kid, then another, maybe a third, without catching a double or triple dose of whatever bug the kids have. And it must be the Lysol wipes, the spray on every door handle, telephone, TV remote, sink handle. You know, my wife bounced between one quarantine girl in the living room and the other in the den and never got sick. I helped a little bit, but catching something this time of the year is not anywhere on the three different calendars I have going. So kudos to all the moms out there that do nurse duty this time of the year. Hope you make it through unscathed. Probably a good day to open the windows and air the house out for a few minutes, and maybe you keep from getting whatever's around. I am no movie reviewer, but you need to go see American Sniper. If you somehow missed those gut-wrenching previews, take my word for it. It's worth the price of a ticket, bag of popcorn, and a Coke. I won't ruin it for you by talking about it, but I will say the more you think about it afterwards, the more powerful the story gets. My brother and I went to see it yesterday afternoon, and the thing that got me the most was the last 5 minutes. I think that's the quietest theater I've ever been in once the movie ended. The only thing I heard were sniffles. I'll say there's some language and other things so that you would expect to see in a movie about war, so just be prepared. And one more thing before we get to the show today. Tomorrow's my big brother's birthday, and I want to say happy birthday. Paul and I have spent our lives together. Of course, we grew up together, have worked together for most of the past 25 years, spent some of the best times together outdoors. A few weeks ago, we were walking a patch of woods at the farm, and we came across what was left of the cabin we built sometime in the early 70s. Where we played Daniel Boone. I'll give you one guess as to who was Mr. Boone and who was Mingo, the man of very few words who always did what Mr. Boone told him to do. There's just a few pieces of split rail walls left, no leather door hinges, no latch or door, but boy, were there a lot of memories there. We've got those memories from there all the way to backpacking elk hunts in Colorado and everything in between. He's got a little more gray hair than I do. Well, if you've seen him, you know he's got a lot more than I do. But he's a great father, fantastic musician, and my best friend. So happy one day early birthday to my brother Paul. And we're going to move on to the calendar. It's getting full, but if you have an event that you want to get on the air, send it to me. The email address is roger@woodsandwatersc.com. I'd love to have those events, especially those ones that benefit charities and that sort of thing that apply to the outdoors. So anyway, the calendar for this week going on right now here in Greenville, the 2015 South Carolina International Auto Show. It's through tomorrow. Today, it ends at 9 o'clock tonight, so you've still got plenty of time to go out there today. Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and tomorrow is free. Well, it's a family day. So what normally would cost you for a kid over the age of six, they're now free. So kids 12 and under are free tomorrow. I was out there Friday as a guest of Chevrolet. I'm not a car guy, and I guess I'll go ahead and go into this little part now and then finish up the calendar after the break. I got an invitation from Chevrolet to go to the auto show, and I rearranged things last week where I could be here yesterday. And, you know, it was interesting. I'm not a car guy at all, but, you know, I went, probably the first one I've ever been to. I met a guy, Fred Liguori. He's a Chevrolet, kind of an outdoor media coordinator for Chevrolet. He does a lot of their outreach to outdoor media associations and all. And we essentially spent 2 hours just looking at Chevrolet models, which was really fine with me. And then we went down to Henry's and ate some lunch. You know, my 2002 Dodge Durango has 252,000 miles on it. And I was amazed at the technology that's pretty much standard on these cars these days. The one thing I like most, and I'm not tech savvy at all and usually rebel until I'm forced to go with it, was what's called Siri Eyes Free. It's essentially what it does, it links your iPhone functions to the car. No looking at your phone for text, directions, or other things, because now Siri can do all that for you while keeping your hands on the steering wheel and your eyes on the road. Most of the new models, they're also 4G hotspots. That's good if you get lost and need help, but not if you just want to disappear for a few days. Yeah, if you saw Facebook or Instagram, I got to sit in the new Corvette Stingray. Pretty cool car. But they don't have an option for a towing package, so that's off my list of new car options. Throw in the price, and it's probably a little out of my budget, too. I do like the new Colorado. I actually saw it up at Lake Fontana right before actually the dealers had it in October. Lots of room, small enough to maneuver around the parking lot, big enough for boat ramp, and with four-wheel drive, tough enough for, you know, whatever you're going to trouble you're getting into. Fred lives out in Chicago but loves barbecue. So, like I said, I took him to Henry's, where he agreed with me that they probably have the best French fries in town, in the world. And the barbecue is pretty good, too. So go take the family to see the new cars and trucks, even if you aren't in the market for one, because these new models will be hitting the used car lots in a few years. And if you're like me, it's not too early to start looking. And then next week, you can do it all over again when you go look at the new boats of the boat show. So car show's there. It is fun to go see all those new cars. Man, there's some... And all the dealers out there. We never left the Chevy floor, and they went to lunch, but there's a lot of cars out there. So tomorrow, kids 12 and under free. Take your family, go do it, and have a good time. And then next weekend, you've got the 2015 Upstate South Carolina Boat Show. That, too, is out at the TD Convention Center. Starts Thursday at noon to 5, Friday 12 to 9, Saturday 10 to 9, and Sunday 12 to 6. That's right out there at Expo Center, too. So this weekend, car show. Next weekend, boat show here in Greenville. And the same weekend as the Greenville Boat Show is the Charleston Boat Show. January 23rd through the 25th, the Charleston Area Convention Center. This is always a good one. I've been to it a couple of times, more because I like the saltwater boats than the freshwater. But, you know, it's all in what you choose and where you are. That show's been going on 35 years and is pretty much got every kind of boat you can want for your taste or your budget. So a couple of boat shows, the car show. Can't get much better than that in one weekend. Palmetto Conservation Foundation, the January member hike on the 24th. The watery passage passes Civil War era trestles and has been newly updated with the mobile tour. You can actually go to their website and look at the whole hike on mobile phone. 4.5 miles, moderate. Going to meet at 10 o'clock. It's free for all PCF members. So if you want to go, join, and now you get to go for free. You know, hiking shoes, dressing layers, water bottles, and a snack. They're going to meet at 722 King Street in Columbia. There's the music. Got a few more things. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with me. back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Huey Lewis, Back to the Future was on last night. Caught the last little bit of it when he's going back to the future, and I was like, boy, Michael J. Fox looks young. Good movie, good music. Thank you, Dave. Going back out on the trail, if you want to help out and volunteer, then the Palmetto Conservation Foundation is where you need to look. The Swamp Fox Passage, January 24th from 9 to 4. They're going to meet at the Francis Marion District Headquarters in Huger, South Carolina. Going to do a 7-hour work day on the trail. And they ask that you bring all workday participants, bring work gloves, a water bottle, and bag lunch. Wear appropriate work clothes with closed-toed shoes or boots. I guess they provide all the tools. If you want more information about that, go to the Palmetto Conservation website. That's palmettoconservation.org, and you can contact them there. DNR news. Ran across this one last night. DNR to conduct coyote biology control program January 27th in Greenville. It's kind of interesting because they're teaming up with the Southern Goat Producers Association, along with Clemson Extension and the South Carolina Sheep Industries Association. It's a free coyote control program in Greenville at the University Center on January 27th. Check-ins begin at 5 p.m., and the program gets underway at 6:30. Now, they are having a barbecue. Let's see. They are at 5:30, there's an option. You can get a meal of pork barbecue and ribs. The meal is $10 for Southern Goat Producers Association members and $12 for the rest of us. I went on last night. You can go online. If you go to the Department of Natural Resources website, you can find this. This is a news release, I think, right at the top of the current news relief section. And there's a link to PayPal where you can go get your tickets. I did that last night. So two of us are going to that. My brother and I, we're going to, in fact, we were talking yesterday about going ahead and getting us a coyote call and figuring out how to play this game with them, because they are having an impact on our deer herd, small game included. So we're going to do this. We're going to this. Actually, there's a secondary story to this one. This one's in Greenville on the 27th. Like I said, it's $12 if you want to eat the meal. If you just want to go for the seminar, that's free. But there was an additional story I found. I'm not even going to pronounce his last name. It's Jay. He's the Fur Bear and Alligator Program Coordinator, Certified Wildlife Biologist, Department of Natural Resources. And they're going to offer these statewide. 27th is in Greenville. The 24th is going to be in Oconee County. 26th, these are both in February. I'm sorry, February 24th, Oconee County. February 26th, York County. March the 3rd, Horry County. March 6th and 7th is going to be down at the Webb Center. March 17th, they're going to have one at Dorchester County. March 28th, 29th at the Fairgrounds. That, I'm sure, will be during the Palmetto Sportsman Classic. I'm right. April 14th in Georgetown County. The 21st of April, Kershaw County. 28th of April in Edgefield County. Uh-oh. It's quit sticking together. Like I said, I didn't have time to scan this one in because I just found the continuation. May 12th, Bamberg County. June 2nd, Calhoun County. They don't have anything scheduled July and August. In September, they're going to be in September the 15th in Marlborough County, September 29th, Williamsburg County, October the 13th in Orangeburg, and October the 27th in Fairfield. So keep checking back on the Department of Natural Resources website, because all of these dates are, I guess the dates are correct, but the location and registration all hasn't been finalized yet, except for the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. So keep up, because like I said, I think this is something all of us can do. All of us who enjoy deer hunting, we need to be doing this. So keep checking back. I'll give you updates as the locations and dates and all firm up. I'll give you more updates. We have a waterfall excursion, which this time of the year can be really pretty depending on the temperature. You get the water freezing around the waterfalls. This one's going to be at Table Rock State Park. That's in Pickens County. On January the 31st, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., waterfowls around in the upstate of South Carolina, but have you visited them? Here's your chance to see some of the beauty that surrounds them. You'll visit one of the highest sets of falls on the East Coast, Raven Cliffs, as well as Wildcat Wayside Falls and Twin Falls. You have to be able to hike 4.4 miles in moderately rugged terrain to see Raven Cliff Falls. If you can make that, the other falls are only 1 mile and a half mile hikes, respectively. We'll stop for lunch at the Overlook. at Caesars Head State Park after Ravenscliff Falls. The special program includes ranger guided hikes to the falls, two nights in the cabins, and transportation on Saturday. They are $200 person single occupancy or $125 double. Camping $75 double or $100 single. You can call the park or go to their website for more information. That's South Carolina State Parks, and look at the Table Rock State Park page. Two things that for the photographers out there, this is really not part of the calendar, so I'll say this. As always, I'll put the calendar on the Facebook page. I have the event, date, location, and website link for each event. But please check a few days before you go, and preferably check the website of the event, not mine, just to make sure there haven't been any last-minute changes. So, for you photographers out there, the South Carolina State Parks has their Making Memories Photo Contest. This is a quarterly contest. In other words, there's one for winter, spring, summer, and fall. That would be backwards. Winter, spring, summer. No, that's right. Winter, spring, summer, and fall. Okay. Okay, we're currently in winter, so this one ends February 28th. Go to the South Carolina State Parks website. Look at the South Carolina Making Memories Photo Contest. And enter. Three winners from each of the four seasons and one overall grand prize winner. I don't have the prizes here. I just have the general announcement. So if you're a photog out there and you want to enter, hey, who doesn't like to see their prints or pictures in action? And then the other is the Harry Hampton Wildlife Fund Photo Contest. Now, we're going to be talking with a gentleman from the Harry Hampton Foundation here as we get closer to the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. But they have a photo contest, and it says, although not everyone gets to be the winner, no one really loses. Just by participating, each photographer goes outdoors to experience and record little glimpses into the wonder of the natural world. Hopefully, as you delight in the beauty and expertise of this year's South Carolina Wildlife Harry Hampton Fund Photo Contest winning entries, you'll be inspired to set aside some time to personally experience a little bit of South Carolina's wildlife, too. Whether you decide to photograph it or not, if a picture truly is worth a thousand worlds, then this photo feature alone tells enough stories to fill nearly three issues of South Carolina Wildlife, and that makes our readers the real winner. That's Joey Frazier from the South Carolina Wildlife Magazine, which is a great magazine, by the way. I like South Carolina Wildlife. Anyway, they've got a whole bunch of rules. I won't bore you with going through them. You can read them for yourself, but I will go through the categories, and they're pretty good. Categories, wildlife, except for birds. So that would be your deer, alligators, that. Then they have a separate category for birds, a separate category for sporting and outdoor recreation. The images, fishing, hunting, hiking, boating, camping, hunting dogs, etc. And the fourth category, scenic landscapes. They're going to have awards, first, second, and third prize in each category, one honorable mention in each category, one best youth photo in each category, and one Harry R.E. Hampton Best of Show Award. No compensation is offered for any use publication. Dribble. But anyway, I take too many pictures. They say when you have a digital camera that you cease to really frame the picture and you just snap away, and I'm a victim of that. And I figure, as bad a photographer as I am, if I shoot that many pictures, at least I'll get one good one. But anyway, I know there's some other ones out there. There's one for Orvis. I don't have it with me. There's an Orvis cover dog photo contest. If you have a dog and a great picture of your dog, then Orvis wants that. You can go to their website. I believe that's probably orvis.com, and look at that. I've got one of Sophie from this year on a duck hunt that, the sun's just the right angle. You can see those big brown eyes, and I thought, I actually have it. The link is still unchecked in my email, so I still may do that one. It's one of those pictures I'll never get again. So anyway, but that's the calendar. That's a few things you can do. Let me check this right quick. Okay. We're going to have Geddes Brandon from the University of South Carolina Angler Zone. He's at a fishing show, and he's actually got John Cruise with him. I know John Cruise is fishing the Bassmasters Classic next month on Hartwell, and they're going to call in a little bit later, so he keeps trying to tell me when he's calling in, and whenever he calls in, we'll make time for him, and I'll just keep right on rolling with what I've got. And what I've got is a little bit of news. And the reason I'm doing this kind of a – I didn't have Gettys and Those in there. We talked this afternoon, and all this came up on short notice. And I was going to try to use this show to get through a whole bunch of things really carried over from last year. Not all of them, but some of them carried over from last winter, because we're going to be so busy here in the next few months. There are guests. We're going to cover SeaWee, the Bassmasters Classic, the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention. It's going to be busy, and I was thinking, I need to get through some of this stuff or else I'll never get a chance to let you guys know what's going on. So he keeps texting me, but we'll just let him, whenever he calls in, we'll get to him and John. Let's see. Did the Chevrolet, did all of this? So let's get to a few news stories, and I'll just take these piecemeal until they get in. Ducks Unlimited, news from them. Now, we've had segments on about the duck stamp, how much it provides for conservation. Yes, I'm in favor of that. I don't mind buying $10, paying $10 more a year for my duck stamp. DU celebrates more than 5 million acres conserved in the U.S. It's a press release off the Outdoor Wire from Ducks Unlimited. It's proud to announce the successful conservation of more than 5 million acres of vital waterfowl habitat in the United States. It's a conservation milestone 30 years in the making. Pretty impressive, if you ask me. And if you're familiar with Ducks Unlimited, you know what they do. In fact, I got a buddy somehow. We're in the Midwest right now who's shooting ducks, and he's sending me pictures, and I don't really like him right now because he's having a good time. But anyway, continentally, more than 13 million acres have been conserved in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, thanks to the contributions of Ducks Unlimited's millions of supporters. Which, again, just stresses the point that when it comes to conservation, those of us that hunt put our money where our mouths are to make sure that the resources we are using are there for us and future generations. This is a great news article. Reference it back before they started the trial period. Now it's going to happen. Starting January 19th on Lake Kiwi. I assume this is the first one. There's lots more coming. South Carolina Department of Natural Resources Law Enforcement Division has completed a survey on Lake Kiwi to locate illegal buoys. DNR officers marked the buoys. There were 75 of them with a warning sticker. The illegal buoys had 30 days from the date marked to begin removing them. If they haven't, starting Monday, they're going to remove them for you. And I see this a lot down along the coast, especially. I'm not on these upstate lakes as much as I used to be, so I don't know how bad the problem is. But I know down at the coast, on the end of everybody's dock, there's an orange marker or a buoy saying to slow down. And it is. It says right here, this action is a result of the increasing number of illegal no-wake buoys that are located on many lakes and waterways across the state. They are quickly becoming a navigational hazard and can otherwise be confusing to, one, the public, and two, law enforcement. And that's the truth. I mean, you're running wide open and you see a buoy off to the right that pretty much looks like a DNR buoy. And you come off plane and it's just somebody's buoy that's got an orange paint. No wake. And it's, you know, so they are. And we've been calling this for a while. You know, when are they going to start policing these illegal buoys? And it's not that I am mindful of my wake, and most boaters are. But you just don't know if it's a real buoy or not. And as soon as you start blowing through buoys, it's going to be a real one, and then you're going to get canned. So anyway, hang on. There's the music. Gettys and Those are supposed to be with us on the other side. If not, I've got more things to talk about. Hope we have a good segment with John Cruz. He'll be here next month. So we'll be back on the other side of the break. We are back on Woods and Water, South Carolina. On the line with us right now, actually ahead of schedule, is Gettys Brannon. Gettys with the University of South Carolina Anglers. And Gettys, you are where right now?
We are in Richmond, Virginia for a Fish and Tackle Expo. A lot of booths here. It's more of a consumer show. A lot of tackle shops have their booths set up, and fun fishing paddles down here. Adam Fillmore,
yeah,
having fish paddle up at Lake Wiley.
Right.
The sponsors the fishing team. We came down here, a couple of guys, and working with him and working with Shane's base booth. So we're having a good old time.
Good. Very nice. Well, look, I'm going to have to put you on as a contributor to the show or buy you lunch next month. What would you rather be?
Hey, I guess we'll just do show contributor. That works for me.
Well, look, this was totally unplanned. We exchanged a few texts yesterday afternoon, called this morning. We were talking, and you said, hey, this could work out really good, so I won't spoil the fun on what you got to announce. But anyway, all right, you fished a tournament, and I noticed you got a new partner this year in your boat. Is that right?
Yes, sir. We changed up partners a little bit this year just so we could get more boats out on the water.
Gotcha.
College fishing is a team deal, so, you know, the more boats we can get out on the water, you know, even if that means changing stuff around, we want to get some of the 20-some-odd freshmen out on the water,
make sure
that they had a boat to fish in, because a lot of them come from, you know, up in, there's a couple of them that are from Virginia, there's a couple of them from Maryland, and they don't have the means to bring their boats down here or
right.
face a storm, so it just, you know, a lot of us guys from around here, we've been fishing together a lot. It worked out good where we all had our own boat, so we're just, you know, trying to get more people out on the water.
Well, that's a great thing. I wondered why, and now you've answered it, and I have even more respect for you guys than I had before.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, what happened? Speaking of boats, what happened on, two weeks ago?
You know, they say boat stands for break out another 1,000.
And you can add, and depending on how long it is, you can add a one and an additional zero to that.
Yeah, you can add a one to the front of that, depending on how long it is. That's for sure. And, of course, it works great during practice, and then, you know, the day of the tournament, or both days of the tournament, it decided it was going to mess up just a little bit. But, you know, you have that, and bass fishing is a lot to do with adaptation. And,
right.
It's a mental game, you know. When there's obstacles, you got to get over them. You got to figure out what you're going to do, how you're going to change your game plan around.
Right.
You'll be able to fish without a motor sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And you can't just, you know, some people just lay down and let it, you know, let it ruin the whole tournament, you know. But you got to figure out your way around it. And, you know, sometimes it teaches you lessons. I mean, you find sometimes, heck, there's some people that go out there, and I've seen people win a tournament fishing off a trolling motor.
Well,
you know, there's sometimes you run into things that you the unexpected things are the best things in fishing.
Was it Clint Eastwood said, overcome, adapt? I forget the third thing he said. That was in Heartbreak Ridge. All right, what's next for the University of South Carolina fishing team?
Next tournament we got is on February 14th on Lake Seminole, FLW. And one more thing I forgot to mention about the St. John's.
Go ahead.
Is we were able to come in 25th out of 130, I believe, but we had a team qualified South Carolina. We're very proud of them, Patrick Walters and Josh Rennenbaum. And I got to give a shout-out to my buddies there at Clemson. I know they're listening in and you know, wanting to hear a little bit about the Hartwell Classic report.
Yeah.
And they did really well.
They did well.
Clemson had two teams in the top 10, I believe.
Yep.
And
sure did.
They were both throwing greenfish swim jigs. So that worked out well.
Even though they're from an opposing school, that gives you a little bit because that greenfish is your bunch, right?
Yes, sir. We picked up some good teams in college fishing. UNC Charlotte, national champions, and Georgia, ourselves, and Clemson, and then we got. I'm trying to think who else. There's a couple other teams, but anyway, yes, sir. We got FLW and Seminole,
okay.
14th. After that, we have the College Classic on Hartwell, the same time as the Classic. Or not on Hartwell, on Keel Week, excuse me.
Right. All right. But we got time to get ready for that because that's in April, the Collegiate
yes,
Championships.
Sir.
All right. Well, you've brought a bigger name to the airways of Woods and Water, South Carolina today, haven't you?
Well, yes, sir. We could say that. We have the Bassmaster Elite Series champion, John Crew, standing right here beside me, owns Missile Bait, and he's going to get on here and talk a little bit about the new Ike jig and give everybody a rundown of what he thinks is going to happen on the Hartwell.
Well, good. Look, I appreciate you hooking me up today, and
yes,
you
sir,
and I will talk soon.
Yes, sir. Hold on, just
all right. Thanks.
Hello,
Mr. Cruz.
Yes. Hey, Roger. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful.
Good. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here with us.
Sure, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I did a little research on you. From as soon as I got here to the studio and could pull up my laptop, you're from Jetersville, Virginia.
Right. Yeah, that's where I was born and raised, and now hail in Salem, Virginia. I've lived there about the last 10 years or so.
Okay, you're almost in the $1 million club in earnings on the Bassmaster Tournament Series.
That's right. I want to try to blow into it by winning the Classic. That'd be a nice way to just go ahead and join that deal.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes, sir.
You grew up pond, bass, and brim fishing. You didn't really like the brim, but you loved the bass.
That's right. That was it, man. I could catch those brim all day, but if I caught, you know, just one bass every hour, I was a happy man.
So, you keep at it for those bass, huh?
That's right. That's right. There's so much more fun, so much more intriguing, so much wilder. I really, really enjoyed it.
You don't like the cold.
No, I don't. I don't function well. I was built. I feel like my body was built for heat.
Right.
It doesn't. If it's 100, 110, I'm perfectly fine. I can sweat and be perfectly comfortable. But if it gets too cold, my hands just don't function real well. I've got I found out at some point I've got a condition called Raynaud's syndrome, where you're circulation in your hands and in your feet kind of over your capillaries overwork and force your blood back into your body. If some of your listeners may have it, and the more I talk about it, the more people I find that have it, and so it just makes it hard to function. But that's not to say I'm telling you I bet you there's not a listener that you've got that's got more gloves than I have in my possession. So I've tried them all and still keep searching out for better ones, but I've learned to adapt, just like guys was talking about. You got to learn to adapt and move on.
So you haven't found the perfect set of gloves yet?
Not yet. I think a small fire close to my hands is about the best thing that I can use.
Well, that makes me feel better, because I am still in the search for a perfect pair of gloves, and I haven't found them yet either. So when you find them, let me know, please.
I will. I'll be sure to pass the message on.
Well, what do you think going into Hartwell? Now, you were, what, number 13 or 14 in points this year?
I ended up 19th in points. Okay. Overall. This is my ninth Classic. I fished the Classic when it was at Hartwell before the one that Alton Jones won. I believe it was in 08.
I was there.
I really like the lake. It's a big lake, only 50 competitors on it. Let's everybody spread out. And there'll be multiple patterns going on the lake as well. So I really like that aspect of it too.
Well, that could be good. All right. So Getty says you're coming out with a new jig that you think will be a factor when you fish Lake Hartwell.
Definitely. We have the missile jig. Mini flip is what we're calling it. It's a compact jig. We've got a fine cut custom skirt on it. VMC custom hook, you know, it's built exactly the way that Mike Iaconelli wanted it, and I've helped him tweak a few aspects of it, and I feel like it is really a cool jig. And I'll tell you what, I talked to Mike last night, and his first question to me was, "Are we going to have plenty of jigs before the Classic?" And if that tells you anything about what kind of a factor that jig will play, that should tell you.
Yeah, especially if Mike Iaconelli is wanting them too.
Exactly, he's wanting to make sure he has his that little compact jig. I mean, it's really, we designed it for pitching and flipping, just to have a little small profile, and it works really well for that. But it also is a good casting jig. You can cast it, and it has that good small profile, comes through cover and brush real well.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's one of those jigs. It's going to replace two jigs in my box when I get that one jig, and we think other people will enjoy it too.
Now, will you fish a trailer on that jig, or will you fish it naked hook?
I fish a trailer on there. Okay. Muscle Bait's Baby D Bomb is what I have fished mostly on it. You can put a small twin tail or whatever your preference. You mess around with it to try to find exactly what kind of profile and what kind of action you're going after.
I got you. In 20 questions, it says you don't like swim baits, so I guess you do like jigs, don't you?
I love jigs. I have learned to like swim baits. I've gotten my butt whipped with swim baits a few times, and so I have learned to adapt and start to understand them. There's various categories of swim baits. There's, you know, the boot tail swim baits, which are the most popular soft plastic ones.
And right.
There's the jointed swim baits, and what I figured out recently is one joint swim baits are much different than double jointed. You know, three sections, two
right.
section swim baits are much different than three sections. So you know, you just never stop learning in this sport. That's one of the things I love about it.
Yeah, in the profile it says you refer to bass fishing as work, and if you don't work at it, you're not going to succeed.
Right. I'm a very competitive person, and I think most of the people that compete in bass tournaments are, but, you know, my brain never stops working on trying to figure out better ways to catch them or to refine the ways that we do use, and, you know, that's kind of the reason I've designed all the baits for the missile baits is, you know, they're fixing a problem that I saw with you know, other soft plastics or a combination of other soft plastics. So that's what I feel like I've built better tools to be able to work with.
Well, good. It says here that you think 5 to 10% of bass fishing is luck, which I think is great because in my hunting world, it's 90% luck.
Oh yeah, it seems like that sometimes, doesn't it?
It
man,
does.
You meet the biggest people that have the best luck and they have success, and it's just really frustrating when you work your butt off and don't have the results to prove how much work you've done. But I'd definitely say, you know, guys can be not so good fishermen and have one good event, but to put together an entire year that's good, or to put together an entire career, much more importantly, in my opinion, that you know, has a very amazing body of work is outstanding. You know, the guys like the Mike Iaconelli, to me, he's gone to 15 Bassmaster Classics in a row. That's impressive. That's a body of work. That shows me a lot. You know, the Kevin Van Dam makes, you know, 22 Bassmaster Classics in a row. His body of work is amazing. You know, multiple Angler of the Years, multiple Classic wins. That's a body of work. That's not luck.
No.
There's no part of that that's luck. And I don't know how anybody can say fishing is luck when one man, you know, or a couple of people can have, you know, a series of accomplishments that last that long.
You're busy. You fish, you have missile baits, and you have a wife and kids. How do you juggle all of that?
I love it. I function best when I have a lot of stuff to do. It's been so long since I've not had anything to do. I don't know what that would be like. But I just, you know, growing up, I'd say, you know, I realized that probably like in middle school, early high school, that whenever I was playing sports and I had better grades than when I was not playing sports, you know, those little in-between times, in-between sports seasons, I had a hard time because I had too much time on my hands and I couldn't manage it the way I needed to. So the more stuff I had going on, you know, you had these little 30-minute, hour windows that you have to get your homework done. You were forced to get it done in that time period, and I was just much more productive when I had time crunches, and that just you know, translated to the rest of my life. So it seems like the more stuff I have going on, the more productive I am on each thing.
And you're exactly right. When you have a limited time, you are much more focused and driven than you are when you think, oh, I've got all the time in the world, and you end up procrastinating until the last minute. You're exactly right.
Right.
Well, great. What are your feelings going into Lake Cartwell next month? Based on practice, how did practice go for you?
Practice went well. I really liked what I saw down there. It's a lake like I kind of described before. Multiple patterns can go on. It, you know, you guys can spread out. It's a big lake. Gobbles up 50 boats really easy. I fished it before, and I fished one section of the lake. And my boat is not going to see any part of that section. I'm going to a completely different section of the lake. I'm going to fish it like a brand new lake.
Right.
And that has a tendency to work real well for me. So hopefully that'll translate into this classic.
Very good. Well, look, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here. I'll be all over that week. I'm sure I will find you, and I'd love to meet you. And at any time you want to come on the show again, just give me a call.
Okay, I definitely appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you down there in a few weeks.
Yes, sir, and good luck in the tournament.
All right, thank you very much.
Yes, sir, we'll see you.
All right.
Well, that was a nice addition to the show today. That was John Cruz. He is going to be here next month fishing the Classic. I have to say thanks a bunch to my buddy Geddes Brandon for being in the right place at the right time and suggesting bringing him on the air. So look forward to hearing from him. You know, that week before the Classic, we've got some things going on. I'm sure he'll be around town. So that was a nice little addition to the story. At least you didn't have to hear me drone on the whole time. Thank you, Dave. Dave doesn't like to hear me drone on either. Okay. Anyway, got about 10 minutes left. And I've got continuing in our little what's in season deal. Quit laughing at me, Dave. I'm going to come in there and get you. Continuing with our little what's in season and tactics for, in this case, ducks. Got an article here from Mr. Wade Bourne. It's published in Ducks Unlimited. If you don't know who Wade Bourne is, you need to Google. He's a patriarch. He really is. Really nice guy. I met him back in October. Came right over to me, shook my hand, introduced himself. It was really neat. He's got an article, Game Plan for Late Season Ducks, and it starts off with probably a paragraph that most duck hunters, we know exactly what he's talking about. And it starts off this way. Some duck hunters have an almost forlorn attitude about the late season. The excitement of the early season has come and gone. Hunters' energy is waning. Hunters' ability to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning is waning, too. That's not in the article. That's just me. The big pushes of new ducks have mostly occurred, and those birds hanging around have seen and heard it all. That is why many hunters get the notion that the late season is just something to endure to finish the marathon. But nothing can be more wrong. The truth is, the last few weeks of the season can offer some great shooting, perhaps the best of the year. Yes, conditions have changed. Many ducks have become hunter-savvy and hard to work. Still, these birds have feeding and mating urgencies in the late season that make them vulnerable to hunters who employ strategies to match this special time. By learning about duck behavior in deep winter and tailoring your hunting tactics accordingly, you can sprint to the finish line instead of dragging across it. Truly, the late season can be a time of excitement and bounty instead of exhausted resignation that the end is finally at hand. And boy, I tell you, that has been me so many seasons. You get into the late season, and yeah, there's fewer people out there. You know, the ducks are hit or miss. The weather's colder. It's a grind. It's like deer season. I often wish we had a 2-week deer season so we could just take 2 weeks off work and do it and be done with it. And sometimes I feel like that way with duck season, too. It's just, the longer it hangs around, and depending if I'm having a normally bad year or not, I just really don't want to go. But he makes some good points. One of his points, late season biology, and this is good to know if you're hunting. The mating urges of ducks into January and February is paramount. You know, they establish those pair bonds for the spring nesting season, so their daily patterns are influenced by whether they need to find a mate or they've already got one. You know, paired ducks, they don't hang out with large groups. They tend to shift into the shrub habitat, thick cover where they can isolate themselves. That's from Dale Humberg. He's a chief biologist for DU. Typical places where would be swamps with buttonbrush, willow, and other dense vegetation. Hunters who understand this shift takes place must decide whether to hunt in the thick places or more open habitats. There might not be as many ducks in the shrub wetlands. But if you're in the right spot, some good shooting can be found in dense cover. So does this mean that late season hunters should abandon fields? Or no, not necessarily. Just remember, in January, a fair number of ducks still haven't paired. They'll be in larger groups. These flocks hold more drakes than hens, and those males are anxious to find mates, which makes them more responsive to calls and decoys. So a hunter has to make a choice. Hunt the thick areas or hunt the open areas. The latter option is the better one in the late season. Tactics for late season hunting. Call smart. In the late season, duck hunters should tailor their calling to specific scenarios such as large flocks, pairs, or singles. Large flocks signal a mass movement of new ducks up or down the flyway, and this is when the hunters should call persuasively in terms of volume and frequency. This is a good time for two guys to work together to draw big flocks into a spread. Aggressive calling can also be effective on single birds late in the season. However, in the scrub or the thick covers where the paired ducks are going to be, tone it down. Usually just a chatter or a few single hen quacks rather than one aggressive call. Set a realistic decoy spread, which is always so important. Be sure you have the wind in mind. You know, like calling, late season decoy spreads should be tailored to different hunting situations. Open areas, large spreads with more drakes than hens. Thick areas, small pairs with a wide landing zone. Especially since ducks may be reluctant to land close to other decoys. Hide better. It's surprising how many hunters get lackadaisical about concealment in the post-Christmas period. By this time, ducks have been hunted all the way down the flyway, and they're especially wary of suspicious-looking setups. Yet many waterfowlers hunt from threadbare blinds, cover blown off, shooting holes open, boat slips exposed, and afternoon spent rebrushing can be a great investment for late-season hunting. Anticipate major movements. Watch your weather. You know, cold and snow push birds down in from Virginia and North Carolina can make it really good here in South Carolina. Mallards in particular are hardy ducks, and they won't often leave an area until ice and snow force them down. Thus, in a mild winter, which we know way too often, birds never make it down this far. We've had a pretty good year because of the cold weather up there, but watch your weather patterns for major movements. Adjust to extreme conditions. Sometimes this is when I need to stay home. You know, when a freeze hits, the shallow prone spots freeze up. They'll move to open water. This is where your bigger lakes come into good hunting. Let's see what else he said here. Finishing strong. You know, he talks about an Arkansas hunter had a late season discovery. Hard freeze, locked up shallow water. He made the adjustment, went to some open areas, got him some ducks. Good season. So, you know, we've wound down deer season. All my stuff is put away. Duck season has about another week to go. You know, hang out, hang with it, re-energize yourself. Go fix your blind, juggle your decoys around a little bit, and, you know, finish the season strong. I know I am. I'm going to stick it out. You know, it's no secret around my house that I do not like cats. I have met very few cats in 47 years that I will even reach out and pet. And there's a study out, and it just reinforces why I don't like cats any more than I do. Study finds many Ohio deer infected by house cats. Now, granted, this is up in Ohio, but you know, it's probably, if it hasn't been here, it will be here, or there's a chance it could be here. And the cats, feral cats, are transmitting a disease to deer in Northeast Ohio. You know, it's not a dead disease. It means you need to thoroughly cook your venison. But, you know, cats, they kill for fun, so they're hard on small game. They reproduce very quickly. And here again, just another one. Now, granted, we don't have to worry about this yet. But feral cats infecting deer in Ohio, just another reason not to like a house cat. One more story right quick before we get to the end of the show. A 28-pound rainbow trout caught in northern Idaho would have been a record breaker, but because it's a threatened species, the guy had to release it. Poor guy. It's the biggest rainbow trout. It was on Fox News. You ought to look at a picture of this rainbow. I was down at Low Country Fly Shop when this story broke. I was there Thursday morning, and Scotty Davis said that it's actually a triploid fish, that it actually has an extra chromosome, and that's why it gets so big. And it does look rather, it's not a very pretty fish. But anyway, got to let it go because it's in a protected area. Got to hate that. And he caught it on 6-pound test line. That's a good fight. Okay, Chuck Norris. Hey, Paul, this one's for you. Chuck Norris once won a guitar battle with Jimi Hendrix playing a pair of rubber bands. Next week, we're going to talk to Mary Mitchell Roberts with the Southeastern Wildlife Exposition in Charleston. SeaWee, as it's known around South Carolina, is one of the largest events of its kind. Art exhibits, antique duck decoys, music, kids events, seminars, wildlife exhibits, a DU oyster roast, and my favorite, the Duck Dogs Water Jumping Competition in Brittle Bank Park. If you've never been, tune in next week, find out all about it. I got a couple of weekend passes to give away, compliments of Seawee. Also next week, I'll be joined here in the studio by Neil Paul from Visit Anderson. I first met Neil down at the FLW Cup in Columbia, where he won the Ranger boat they gave away, of all people. We'll be talking Bassmasters Classic and a lot of the other events that they have because of the new Green Pond boat landing and facilities. Who knows what else Anderson has planned for this year? But we'll find out next week. So James is somewhere down the road. Oh, wrong music this week. Hey, that's okay. James was in Paris, and I didn't really like what he did over there this week. So we'll let James go for this week. It's going to be a busy spring here. Get those events on your calendar. Be careful when you're out there. Take the back roads, and don't forget the camera. Talk to you next week.